Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben. Hey, friends.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Doing
all
good.
All right.
Fine. Yes. I'm fine.
We're all
Everything's fine.
Everything's
fine.
How are you?
We all float down here.
Oh, you know, I haven't seen chapter two yet of it, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. Anyway, this episode is coming to you on the penultimate day of the 2010s.
Of the teen years?
Of the teen years. This is December 30th, 2019. In a couple days, it's going to be 2020, if you can believe it.
So are you saying our century is going to be launching into adulthood?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Our century is going to be able to legally buy alcohol pretty soon.
And drive, too.
See, if it's the 20s, then everything's going to be late. It's like the college years.
The college years, yeah.
All right, so seeing as how it is the last show of the year and the last show of the decade, let's just talk about what we really liked and or maybe not liked as much this year. Who's got their best books of 2019 they want to...
I have a long list of favorites from... this is 2019?
Yes.
Just 2019.
Starting with 2019.
Just start with 2019.
I wasn't listening because I was looking at my list.
Yeah, you got to pay attention.
Why don't you go, Nicole?
I'll go.
I read five comics this year. Yeah. What do you want?
I was lazy, I'll be honest, because I was busy just trying to make sure I was keeping track of stuff for our special guest episode. Basically, everything I cared about this year all came out like in the last month or two. So that's quick and easy for me. Innsmouth, which I reviewed already, which is the Lovecraftian comedy featuring a lot of POC queer characters. I think it's my favorite book of the year. And then Cosmo Knights, which I also reviewed recently, which also features lots of queer people. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm finding. Everything that had queer people.
Queer. Yeah.
Because She-Ra is like, yes, so much great queer representation.
Why do you feel that is? Why are those characters intriguing to you?
Because most of them, other than it's a different point of view that I'm, unaccustomed to in some ways.
Right.
But it's also, like in She-Ra's case, there's just a certain... genuine optimism and actually caring about people and lack of cynicism, which I'm all about cynicism, but it's because it's coming from what I believe a genuine source that I can really appreciate these.
Right.
And it's just like a fresh take. All of this feels like a completely different take on familiar genres and tropes and seeing it come from the same old creators and the same old superheroes. It's like, I've seen this. This is fine. You know, it doesn't mean the old ones are bad, but it's just nice seeing something different.
Right.
And I'm a little bit more about that because I'm inundated by the same old crap all the time.
Yep.
And so getting something that's fresher and different, which is why I like the European books, the manga.
Yeah.
One of my other choices for the year, even though I guess it launched in 2018, is Witch Hat at Atelier. It's just a joy to read. And I think there was Delicious in the Dungeon. That's not new this year, but every volume that came out, the volume that just came out this past week, made me happy. Everything about it made me happy. Mm-hmm. And not too many books do that anymore. They either make me gripe or they make me sad. And I like sometimes being made sad. But just actually having a book that feels joyous is something that is rare for me now. So
we had like a darkening year where it was just like, give me your brutal, give me your tortured. And now we're just like, give me brightness.
Murder Falcon's another great choice that I would put on there. And that's another book that has the darkness, but again, is more about appreciating the value of family, friends, life, love, all that stuff, all that crap.
That one is so weird because I don't necessarily think of it as like a top one for me, but that like last few pages like hit me so hard that I actually wept.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like, dang.
Yeah. Books that can actually create an emotive response out of my dead soul. I give them extra credit for that, you know? Those were the books that come to like the front for me. There were plenty of other good ones. Immortal Hulk's still great. It is, I think, the best Marvel ongoing series. Like, I have to, at this point, I have to start compartmentalizing things and being like, that's the best ongoing, but maybe House and Powers of X was maybe the best Marvel thing or not. It was definitely the best X-Men thing for 10 years.
Yep.
So that'll make the top decade list right there for me.
Yeah.
And again, something that approached it from a different point of view and changed the paradigm. A paradigm shift.
Absolutely.
You know? So that's kind of where I'm all about. It's where I'm always trying to get our customers to just try something different.
Right.
I did hear you suggest Murder Falcons to a couple different customers today when I was loitering.
So, I'm sure if I could think of some more stuff, they'll pop up. But those are the stuff that made an impact for me.
Yeah. There's only a small handful for me. I'd probably put a natural in there because I'm obsessed with Mirka Andolfo's stuff now. I totally hover over her Instagram and her Twitter all the time and eagerly await, you know, the next series of things that she's doing. I think Infinity 8, even though it's been going on for a while, it had one of the best arcs, I think, this year, a real turning point in the story. And I just really enjoy that series so much. I think Ogre Gods is on there for sure, because it's just something that they keep coming out with material and I keep eating it up because it's just really phenomenal in what it does.
That's on my list too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there was a new Sunstone this year, which was always great. I don't know if it would be like my top. It's just my standard, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Giant Days is great. Sunstone is great, you know? It will always be on there if there's new stuff. I think Black Stars Above, number one, is an exceptional issue.
I just read that. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You need to read that.
Okay. Exceptional. Cool. Yeah. It is all exceptional. Right. Hands down, the best single issue I read this year. And I'd say Our Dreams at Dawn, the manga, the LGBT manga. I've read two volumes so far. I'm really looking forward to a third. And it's just, it's nice to have a manga that really seems to be LGBT and not just like boys' love or girls' love or something like that. It's actually dealing with just being gay in Japan. And some of it is a little tropey and some of it is, you know, maybe not up to par of what we would want in queer comics, but it's getting there. So I think it's really good and I like the art in that one. And did I say Money Shot? Because why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why not?
It's my jam.
That was fun.
It's just my jam. It's just fun. It's just it's sexy popcorn, you know?
Sexy popcorn.
It's popcorn wearing bikinis, you know?
Oh, I'll throw in Little Birds. Bird. I forgot about that. That was a really fantastic story. I just love the artists as well. So sometimes some of these books is more just for the art, and it's good to highlight them for the year. Just like, look at this guy.
Bertram. Different.
Bertram, yep.
Yeah, his stuff is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. What about you, Cole?
Yeah, what do you got for 2019?
Well, I am looking at this list going, God, I have a preponderance or a predominance of superhero comics.
That's okay.
But for the decade, I don't think I do. Mm-hmm. But for the year, the Vision maxi series, Tom King and Walta and Marsh, and of course the Mr. Miracle.
I thought that was a previous year, the Vision series.
Well, does it count when the trade came out?
I haven't been doing that because I've seen some lists, but you can just do Tom King across the board. Anything Tom King that may or may not have been released this year.
I do have the Vision for the decade as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. How about Mr. Miracle?
Sure. Absolutely.
Immortal Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's being real specific here.
The House of X and Powers of Ten, obviously.
Definitely.
These Savage Shores from
Vault. Oh yeah. I still haven't read that one. That's for book club.
Yeah. That should be on my list too.
I'm still really interested because I just don't know where the book's going, and Sumit Kumar's illustrations are just absolutely gorgeous.
Yes,
and it's wonderful to have this it starts out and you think you're going to be reading another Victorian vampire story, and you realize this is not about Western culture.
Right.
This is about Southeast Asian culture. This is about an older culture, and
it's informed from the point of view of that culture.
It's so, you know, you're learning so many things very quickly, and you fall in love with these characters, and you come to despise the privileged white ghouls from Europe. you know. So, yeah.
Would you guys say that maybe Vault might be one of the VIP publishers for the year?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Well, I'm pretty impressed because the next with them, because the next book on my best of the year is Fearscape, which is another title of theirs that I've been reading. Yeah.
I don't think everything's been hitting it out of the park, but the stuff that hits is like really solid. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously Batman White Knight, which, you know, Sean Murphy is, he's a terrific, terrific illustrator. He has such a wonderfully consistent, tight vision of reality, and his, and the way he does the cityscapes, the costumes,
the cars.
Yeah,
I like his cars.
Yeah, they're good. He's got the,
and then to discover that he's actually a really deep thinking and fine writer, you know,
which doesn't happen all the time.
And one book that I kind of was on the fence about was Second Coming, which, you know, the first issue dramatically left a real impact on me. I think it's kind of losing that because it started out hot because it was weaving so much of the story of the non biblical story of Jesus' life into the comic book, into the modern superheroes, with the modern superhero stories. I think they're spending too much time making it satirical with the God being just a jerk of a nasty father figure. I think it's losing its way really quickly, which is too bad. But, you know, if you would ask me, like, with the first issue, I would say that would be one of the best of the year. But, yeah, that's my best of the year list.
What do you got for the decade, then? Let's just move on to that.
Well, it's a long list, buddy.
Well, we don't need me to mean to mention everyone.
I think I do.
he typed it out in everything,
yeah,
then.
I did. Fun Home, Lock and Key, Prince of Cats by Ron Wimberly, which I think is an unrecognized classic.
It's going to be a movie.
Making it into a movie. Yeah. And I cannot wait to see what he does with this because it is hip-hop Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautifully drawn. It's ahead of its time. It is already back in print because it was a Vertigo title, but it's obviously Saga, East of West, Afterlife with Archie, Annihilator, Grant Morrison and Fraser Irving's Annihilator, which I just thought was the most gonzo freaking science fiction story. And it was also metatextual, and it was so Grant Morrison doing Grant Morrison so well. Mm-hmm. Hellboy in Hell, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Black Panther, The Mighty Thor.
Jane Foster stuff.
Jane Foster story, you know.
Jason Aaron's run.
Yes. Yeah.
It's still not over yet.
Right. Yes.
It's still just finishing, I think,
that
in 2020.
Aaron had a bigger plan for Thor.
He's like 70% of the decade.
Yeah. he really is.
I bought into the Jane Foster stories. I thought they were absolutely marvelous.
But then went back to all the God Butcher stuff?
No.
It's worth it.
No, yeah. I came in for the Jane Foster stories. I left with the Jane Foster stories.
I think you can jump in there, too. Yeah.
Obviously, We Can Never Go Home.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, and obviously the Flintstones.
The Flintstones. That thing that you're super obsessed with.
A lot has happened in this decade.
Snagglepuss Chronicles, Exit Stage Left, Upgrade Soul by Ezra Clayton Daniels, Isola by Fletcher and Kirschel, and as I mentioned earlier, the Vision maxi series. And,
and that
is still a pretty short list because there was a lot of stuff.
Lot has happened.
Yeah. So here's something to consider. This has been my entire life in this industry, is the last decade.
Wow.
And I know that's not a lot to Chris Casso's life, but it's very pivotal to think I moved to Seattle. I consistently was, you know, going to a store, trying out comics, getting a pull list for the first time, starting to work in a comic book store, now managing a comic book store. It's just too much to handle. It's too much to look back on and go, what did I read that is like my top? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Did you have a list?
I mean, a lot of stuff that Cole mentioned would be on that list. Lock and Key is one of my... Yeah, thank you. I'll just take your list.
Would you put Providence on there?
I would put Providence on there. That is one of my favorites.
I debated, but I already had a long enough list.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah.
Yeah, here's the trick. I get into the problem of needing to compartmentalize because right. on the newsletter, I've already posted 4 end of list links from like Publisher Weekly and The Beat and a few others. And like one of the guys from the Comics Journal was kind of like me about him. And then somebody else on there is like me, you didn't include this, you didn't include that. And it's like, yeah, and that's the thing. There's just like, there's so many sub niches.
Yeah.
And like, you know, my favorite thing is monsters. That should definitely be
Wait,
somewhere.
Didn't I say that?
No. No, yeah, you, you didn't say it, but you wrote it.
I had it on my list. I skipped it.
Okay. Yeah. And then, but then for me, it's like, is it worth subcategorizing certain things, or do I just like say that To Your Eternity beats the crap out of everybody else? You know, so it's just one of those.
Anything that Yoshitaki Oima,
anything they do,
Oima does is gold. Yeah,
but that's a book I would say that one had a profound effect on me, and but yeah, it's
a
so
really
difficult.
Unfair question to ask. What's the best book of the decade?
Yeah,
what did you enjoy the most?
Same, or what had the most influence
or
on
like,
things?
Sure. Yeah, or impact. No. Yeah, because I was thinking of it in that term because it was so overwhelming to me to think of things because I've discovered stuff that's older material, and I've discovered new material. So you know, a lot of my important of the decade ends up actually being superhero stuff because you get your Dawn of X, your House of X, Powers of X. Jonathan Hickman's Secret War stuff was very epic, although unfortunately didn't really do anything in the long run. I think Tomasi's Superman is really good. Pretty much anything Tom King touched, you know, Batman, Vision, Miracle, Al Ewing's Ultimates, Al Ewing's Immortal Hulk, Al Ewing is just important in general in my life.
Yes.
Coates' Black Panther, to a point. I don't care about Intergalactic Wakanda, but right. I think that what he did prior to that really was a big deal. And, you know, Hawkeye actually made, Matt Fraction's Hawkeye made comic book readers. It like actually generated people to come in and check out comic books. I've had people in Corner Comics tell me that brought them either back in or brought them into the fold. So that has a huge impact.
You could say it's the same for like Bitch Planet and a few others. Like
exactly.
That.
Yep. A lot of Image stuff. Saga is a big contender on that, right. You know. And
if we're also just talking, not necessarily like personal favorites, but things that mattered.
Yes.
They called his enemy. And
yes, they called his enemy.
Why am I not walk, not run? Walk?
March.
March. Thank you.
Yes, March.
My
absolutely.
Brain. March. March. Well, the next one is called Run. He's doing a sequel called Run. Yeah, that's got been delayed.
John Lewis.
Yeah, John Lewis's book. That one's very important.
Absolutely.
And as far as just, you know, spreading out, getting the word out of a civil rights movement to younger readers, you know. So there's so many books are like just in the autobiographical section that are so important. I read a book about Hedy Lamarr.
Yep.
That's very educational, and like the existence of Wi-Fi is because of her, you know. So there's so many of those books that are going to get overlooked, you know, but I would say are like utterly important for their release in this past decade, you know. So
it's a lot to take on.
All right, I'm Googling Hedy
Lamarr. But you guys
Lamarr
did a
Wi-Fi.
Great job.
There is something that I saw on someone's list that Batwoman Elegy technically is in this decade. Is that correct? Do you know?
Let's see,
if you're looking at 2020.
That's pre-52.
Right.
And pre-50.
Which is 2011.
So it might be right on the cusp. Okay.
Yeah. Which is one of those things that had me start reeling because when I moved to Seattle and found my comic book store, that one of the people there said, "You need to read this." And I wasn't reading superheroes. I didn't care. And I was like, "This is amazing." And it started a whole thing for me. So if that counts, then that's really personally pivotal.
So if we're talking the biggest events in the comics in the 2010s, what would you say had the most influence on the industry?
Well, I'd say at least for this past year, the proliferation of Scholastic as like the premier publisher is big. So the rise of Raina Telgemeier.
And Dogman.
The queen and king of
comics.
That I'm going to say in the long run, will be possibly the most important thing to get into the next decade, because it's going to, it has introduced a whole next generation of readers and will probably continue to do so for at least another generation. And maybe those people will come in and buy my comics here. So that'll be important.
We just need to survive.
Yes. You know, but like I, just as an example, I had a customer in who I would say is maybe in his mid-20s, and he was saying something, I forget what the book was, but like he got to see a certain comic book when he was younger, and it made a profound impact on him because of the art style and the type of storytelling, and it still held on to him. And that's the hope I get with our nonprofit, is that like we can, I'm slowly giving Witch Hat Atelier to every teacher, and I hope that at some point some 12-year-old read that, and 10 years from now I'll talk to them and I won't want to kill them. So just
because of the sweet message within the manga that they read. Yes.
No, this, I want smarter people in the future. Yeah, okay. I want people who can actually talk about their emotions and not be stunted, and people who are empathic, towards others, and just, you read a book. Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's where the movement of Scholastic bringing all this stuff up, and all the other publishers picking up pace because of them, First Second Press and Random House and Paper Cuts and all these others, like, and even Marvel and DC now, they see it and they're beginning to publish books that children can afford finally.
Yes.
The TP graphic novel is what they're calling it. And it's this kind of squatter, fatter book where you get 12 issues for $13. Yep. Because somebody finally figured out kids can't buy a $20 trade paperback for 6 issues. So now we're finally getting stuff like Miles Morales and Kamakan and all these other characters of representation. And it's because Marvel looked at the market and they're seeing what Scholastic's doing, and they're like, oh, we got to catch up.
Yeah, and if you look at the impact of comics, Miss Marvel is a big deal.
Yes.
Even in, we're going to see her on the big screen, but even she's like a big deal in this Marvel game that they're doing. They actually put her as the catalyst to try to bring the Avengers back together. So she's poignant enough in the comic book culture that they are like, yeah, she's the one. She's the fangirl that's just going to be like, oh my God, Captain America, you guys need to go to, you know. So things like that. And Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man.
I would put the release of Into the Spider-Verse movie as a big event for multiple reasons. But at the very least, I mean, that character's been around for some time now, but this got him out to the world on a bigger stage, and that will bring in more readers and more readers of color, and expand their horizons on what they can find in this medium. So I feel that movie is a pretty big deal.
Well, winning an Oscar doesn't hurt.
They did a really good job with it. You mentioned one thing that you wish for the future is that, you know, kids today will read comic books, become comic book readers and decent human beings when they come into your store 10 years later.
Hopefully.
Does anybody have any other wishes for the industry or anything else for the coming year or the next 10 years?
So to press Nicole about 5 hours earlier was like, either thrive or die. It was kind of where I was feeling, because we're in this weird comatose state. But I think the optimistic Nicole of like, oh, I'm around humans again, I can feel feelings, makes me think that the pushing of like LGB material and POC and a lot of people doing self-publishing stuff, like we've had guests on the show who are doing their own stories. We're seeing a lot more stuff being pushed in media, like having the She-Ra cartoon and having Noelle Stevenson, who is so gay, doing this amazing job with the show, that we're going to get a lot more positivity out in the world. We're going to get a lot more people feeling like they are included, and that overall this is going to be a big push. I think also that you can create your own material, that you don't have to try to be the rock star at like Marvel or DC. You can still strive for that if you want, but it's not going to limit you from putting out something. Having crowdfunding be a big deal, especially in comic books and in the industry, is a huge deal in the future of how we get creative material, new IP out in the world. Yeah. And I think that that's going to have a huge impact.
And it'll help the entire, all of media from being horribly stagnant and us getting like the 20th sequel for Terminator.
Having some suit say like, oh, this is what we need to do because the numbers say this, instead of it being like, no, we need to do this because this is interesting, not because it's safe. Yeah. You know, creativity takes an amount of risk, and putting yourself out there mm-hmm. has a certain level of vulnerability. It may completely fail, mm-hmm. you know, but that's what we need in the world to actually get something fresh, unique, and mm-hmm. get different voices out there.
Quick backtrack. As far as most important things of the decade, the proliferation of Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because that basically allowed for a whole different generation of creators to actually get their stuff made,
right?
And yeah. then that allowed that stuff to get picked up and become more mainstream in certain aspects.
And web comics coming up, I think that started really early 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that it became very prolific in this last decade for sure, and people have created careers around it using Patreon. Mm-hmm. I have a web comic person that I follow all the time, and I think that's how they make their living.
Yeah.
They just make their web comic, mm-hmm. Which is really a cool thing to be able to do.
Yeah. And as a cultural thing, again, stuff like the Me Too movement, because it's also allowed for a lot of creators in the industry to call out the more toxic elements. And there's so many creators that are no longer part of these machines
right.
because people finally pointed out that they abused it over the past couple decades.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the changing of the structure of comics and the boys club element. I mean, just this past 6 months, we had at least a half a dozen creators, they had to account for their behavior.
Right.
And some of them, sadly, it's like, oh, that again, that guy.
Unfortunately, yes, they are prolific in other ways.
Yeah. But
so
you know, that's relevant.
Yeah.
All right.
So there's a lot of things that have happened in this last decade that I think will have very large impacts on what we're going to see.
So more of that. Let's have more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. we can probably talk for another couple hours on all of that, but we need to move on.
But
so
we're
let's
tired.
Move on. But it's also, you know, it's you know, 10 years is a long time, especially when
it's
1 year feels like a long time, mm-hmm. especially yes. in this industry, which is vastly changing.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Nicole, let's start with you after Cole says what he wants to say.
We talk about the worst, though.
Let's save the worst for another day. We will talk about it. Keep those notes, Cole. We need to move on. Keep those notes.
Chris, may I please have my notes? I wouldn't want anybody to see my worst list.
All right. Let's
also update that thing to, instead of saying image, to say vault on your Black Stars Above.
Oh, it is vault.
Black okay. Stars yeah. Above. Yeah.
All right.
They're
so,
not going to know what we're talking about.
Nicole, what do you want to tell us about this week?
Boys love, because why not? One of my favorite artist writers is Nagabi, and they do the girl. Why do I want to say with the dragon tattoo? Oh my God, why am I blanking? The girl from the other side. The girl from the other side. And that series, I believe, is still going or is coming to an end soon. And I found that this creator did a boys love anthology, but it's not just a boys love anthology. It is an anthropomorphic boys love anthology in a secret hidden wizard school. So it's like
that's a lot going
so
for
many
it.
Things. It is anthropomorphic. It is wizards. It's, you know, kind of Harry Potter-ish in that way, I guess. Mm. But it's just little stories focused on different characters throughout the school. And the art is a bit on the kind of sparse side in ways, you know, like there's not a ton of detail that this artist does. And I noticed this with the girl from the other side, that sometimes it can be a little vague, but I think in this one, because it's in a school setting and not like in a forest or something like that, that it's, it still works really well. I think that they, capture, animal anthropomorphic characters, really well. It's enjoyable. It's kind of got a bit of a whimsy to it, and it's in a fairy tale type way. So one thing to mention, I've talked about this with my book club people, and somebody who reads a lot of manga mentioned that there's a lot of like non-consent in Boys Love. Like there's a lot of people kind of thrusting themselves on other people.
Really?
It tends to be a way, and that they wanted to see, you know, more consenting sort of stories. And so as I was reading this, since I don't really read a ton of Boys Love type things, like I kind of like it from afar, but I don't tend to indulge in it as much, which doesn't really sound like me, but this was interesting because there are people like casting spells on each other so that they can kiss them. You know, it's like there's like some teacher student things, you know. So I know that Boys Love isn't for everybody, and I think there's a certain level of buy-in when you're looking into Boys Love. Did you find a particularly interesting panel there?
I'm just gonna say, sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
But there's a great panel here of a unicorn in a lab coat pouring coffee. And if Nagabe could just make a pin of that, they'd make instantly $1 billion
yes.
in the queer community.
Well, I would buy that.
Just a unicorn pouring coffee.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, that's like instant pin sales.
Overall, I think what you need to keep in mind when you're reading things like this is that it is fiction. It is fun. It is fantasy. It is not supposed to be a manual for how you need to operate through life. And I think sometimes we don't tend to separate those things. You know, we think that we need to be like socially conscious and ethical and everything. But I think that the fun part about kind of breaking loose and not being ethical in a fantasy realm where it's safe to explore those ideas and not do those things in reality can be fun. And I think that's the appeal of Boys Love, is doing kind of naughty things and having it be like sexy characters or characters that you are interested in for whatever reason. For me, I think I'm just curious because I really like this creator and I'm like, you're doing what?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a fun thing to explore. I'm still going through it, but I've read quite a few of the different stories, and there's definitely been times where I'm just like, okay. but ultimately, I would recommend this if you like Boys Love, if you do like the creator, The Girl from the Other Side. I think it's this weird but fun anthology series.
And if you like unicorns and lab coats.
Yeah. It is also good to mention that it is teen rated, so it is not one of those mature things that I like to read. So
no tentacles.
So there's no tentacles, there's no members or things like that. It tends to be, you know, kissing and kind of like, you know, touching, massage, whatever, those types of things. So so it's not going to go into those other realms. And it is $13.99, I think it's a really good value for that, because you just get a ton of stories and you could savor it and just go bit by bit. Just binge.
Binge. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nicole. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm experiencing some unprecedented joy from an unexpected source. I picked up the Sandman Universe special Hellblazer, which is the preview standalone from Black Label, now that Vertigo's dead, of the new John Constantine Hellblazer comic. It's written by Simon Spurrier and illustrations by Marcio Takara, and I almost started crying when I was reading this because it's so much a return to the irascible, crude, vicious, outspoken punk rock mage that I grew up reading.
That's good.
For 300 years.
That's great.
300 years. 300 issues. Felt like 300 years.
How old are you again?
That's coming up too. It starts out with a bang, and I was experiencing tremendous joy because there are callbacks to the earlier series and not the afterbirth attempts at, like, you know, softening and gelding John Constantine and the WB TV series that I got into so much hue and cry with friends on the internet. Yeah. I actually discovered my own supervillain in my friend Jose, who became the antagonist. And we established this whole antagonistic relationship on the social medias because of that stupid TV series. Because no one seemed, I was so infuriated and frustrated because I didn't feel like people got why I was upset by it, what was lost.
Mm-hmm.
This book has the tone This book is the John Constantine for Brexit, for the Trump era, and I'm looking forward to what happens. And Constantine has always been an inconstant narrator, but he narrates the story, and there's a poetry to it that I think has not been there since Ennis had his hands on the book and other writers. The story bounces around in this one shot, bounces around in time, but there's a point where he's in the Ravenscar mental institution. He wakes up on a cot. I'm going to read this to you because the thought process is so, Spurrier so adeptly captures the psychology of this character. Constantine says, "Escape then. I could invoke Almira's, perform the rite of invisibility from the Clavicula Regis and slip out. By skeebles or baron or all that airswater are tricky to source a toad skin, but I'd manage. Next idea. I could raise Sirgat, meaning of Sirach, who can break any lock. Might struggle to find a virgin spun thread, but I bet there's dental floss in the dispensary. Of course, I could just fake a fit and bite out the throat of the first orderly who shows up with keys, less messy than summoning in the long run, but there's always a tidier way." Mm. And I was like, forgive my mispronunciation, my trouble saying words, but that was like, this is perfect. This is Constantine. This is he's going through this whole lexicon of absurd magical ideas that have like a practical hit to it. And he's just unapologetic about everything he does, and I really freaking miss that.
Good.
It's a rude book.
Nicole, can you help me out? So there's Simon Spurrier, and then there's Cy Spencer. Which one did X Club?
I thought it was Simon Spurrier.
And this is Spurrier, so I should like this.
But does he sometimes go by Cy Spurrier?
I thought
so. Is that where? Because I think
they're the same human to me.
Yeah, it gets confusing.
Yeah, and it's not that I don't like the other one, but I love the other one so much that when I look at it and I find out it's not him, I get disappointed. So if this is the one I love, I will love this.
He's chain smoking. Mm. He's just kind of back to anyway. So If Hellblazer was something you were fond of back in the 80s and the 90s, then good news. If it was not something you could not get your head around before, don't bother. It's not your book.
Simon Spurrier did X Club.
And that's
Simon Spurrier.
So I'll love it. Okay.
Yes. All right. Cool. Thank you, Cole. And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
So I thought I'd end the year on a positive note on Brian Michael Bendis.
What?
Because I'm generally complaining about him. So I think I already reviewed number one or number one and two or something of Batman Universe. This was the material that was exclusively published in the Walmart giant size comics. And DC's finally just, they did a Superman one, a Wonder Woman one, and Batman Universe. And it's Brian Michael Bendis and Nick Darrington. It was really fun. I gave it a good review on number one, and it's maintained. And sometimes I think it's just, sometimes you get a combination of a writer and artist where the artist can really rein it in and get the best out of the writer. Usually you hear that the other way around, I think. And the last two issues were a joy because the overall plot is that Batman gets pulled into this complicated mystery where in the end, Vandal Savage, the immortal caveman, is trying to get like a magical item. And they travel through time, they travel the planets, they have all these wacky adventures with Green Lantern and Jonah Hex, and everybody shows up. And in the last issue, there's a great moment where Vandal Savage has like the thing, the magical talisman, and Batman just starts yelling, "I'm not afraid of you." And Vandal Savage is just like, "I didn't think you were." And Batman's like, I'm full of not fear. And he starts like reciting the Green Lantern thing. And the entire time, Vandal Savage is just like, are you okay? Are you having a seizure? And then Batman becomes like a special Green Lantern. And they have this issue where Vandal Savage wiped Batman from reality, his existence as Batman. And as Bruce Wayne, in a new reality, within three pages, he found Vandal Savage and suddenly remembers that he's Batman. And you get this amazing shot with every Batman character in one panel. And Batman just going, "I'm Batman," as he remembers his entire life. And then they jump through time and space, and you see Darkseid and Mr. Miracle. You see Enemy Ace. You see Golden Age Superman. You see the Atomic Knights and their Dalmatians. And just all this weird stuff happening. And yeah, he got it. Bendis figured out the best story he could tell with Batman, and they just did a concise, fun story. So when this is a trade, it'll be well worth getting. Nick Derringer's art is absolutely gorgeous. I love him. And this is what I hope Bendis can aspire to do. And I think what he needs to do is not be given a run. Like, you get Superman for 2 years. Like, no. Give him a leash. Give him 6 issues. And maybe he'll tell you the best story he can.
Yeah.
So this is what I got out of him on this one.
Right on, Batman Universe. Thank you, Chris. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Also, leave us a review if you'd like, and check us out on all the social medias, and send us an email if you want, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And our friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions are going to come to us from me.
Uh-oh.
And for the most clickbaitiest quiz time title of the year, here are 5 comic book facts you just won't believe. These are also like the last time I did quiz time, where they're multiple choice, but I'm going to give you a chance to answer them first before I give you the options. Number one. In 1990, Neil Gaiman's The Book of Magic contained a character named Tim Hunter, who shares a number of remarkable characteristics with what character who didn't appear in print until much later?
Harry Potter.
He was a bespectacled 12-year-old kid with a pet owl who takes up his preordained destiny to enter a world of magic hidden in plain sight, just like Harry Potter, who debuted in 1997.
I always wonder if Gaiman's just that nice to Natsu, or if because both properties are Time Warner that they're like, shut up.
Either can be the case. Number two, the 1954 Scrooge McDuck comic, The Seven Seas of Cibola, contains a scene which is said to be the inspiration for what iconic movie moment? All right, I'll give you the options. A, two thieves remove an idol from a pedestal, which triggers a giant rock to chase them, much like the opening scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark. B, Donald Duck walks across the street with his nephews and yells at a taxi, "I'm waddling here, I'm waddling here," much like Dustin Hoffman did in Midnight Cowboy. Or Scrooge McDuck sees his reflection in a giant gold coin and asks his reflection, "Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? I'm the only one standing here. Are you looking at me?" A scene which apparently De Niro ripped off in Taxi Driver.
So the first one.
It is the first one, obviously.
But the other two were really good.
They're really good, yeah.
Number three, Jeffrey Albertson is the
I gotta catch up on my breath for the last one.
Jeffrey Albertson is the actual name of what fictional character? A, Big Bird from Sesame Street. B, Comic Book Guy from The Simpsons. Or C, E.T. from E.T.
B.
It is the Comic Book Guy from The Simpsons. Number four, comics can influence not just pop culture, but the scientific community as well. What term from a comic actually made it into the accepted scientific journals?
Batmantium.
It's pretty vague. This was written to be a multiple choice question, so I'll give them to you. A, Jarvis, or just a rather very intelligent system, became the official name of a navigational subroutine on board the International Space Station. B, it's clobberin' time, a favorite saying from Fantastic Four's The Thing, is now the official go-ahead signal for Colorado's Department of Transportation when rock blasting. Or C, Thagomizer from a Far Side comic, is now the recognized scientific term for the spikes on a Stegosaurus's tail.
Please, Thagomizer.
Oh, please,
it is
one.
The Thagomizer.
Nice.
Gary Larson came up with that in a 1981 comic, and yes. It is now the recognized term.
But what was Thag's last name?
I don't.
Like, you know, we've named it after. Yeah, we named this after Thag.
Thag Munson or something
like
exactly.
that. Exactly.
And finally, number five, the Howard the Duck movie is one of the most critically panned adaptations of all time. To add insult to injury, it holds what other distinction? I'm just going to give you the options. A, it costs more to make than Return of the Jedi. B, it made less at the box office than George Lucas's student film, THX 1138, which had a very limited release. Or C, cinematographer Richard H. Klein was so embarrassed he quit filmmaking altogether.
B.
Damn, I want to say all of the above.
It is not all of the above, although I wish it was. It is A. It did cost more to make than Return of the Jedi. It cost $36 million, whereas Jedi cost $32.5.
Yeesh.
Well, that is Bookport, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next year.
Woo-hoo! Nice.